Good morning. I want to call this conference committee for House Bill 3438 to order. And I think we will start, just because we have a lovely accompaniment of both House and Senate members, just quickly with names and maybe your district. And I will not ask you your favorite or least favorite junk fee, but I was thinking about it on the way here. Starting maybe with you, Senator Marty.
John Marty, district, Senate District 40.
Eric Anderson, DFL Research.
Lucy Rain, House District 48B.
Representative Jeff Dobson, House Seat 11A, which is all of Carlton
County. Pause. One trick they do over in these Senate things is you actually have to turn on the mic before you do it for House members.
Representative Jeff Dodseth, House Seat 11A, which is all of Carlton County, Northern Pines, Southern St. Louis.
Morgan Durfee, Committee Legislative Assistant for Commerce Committee.
Simon Brown, Committee Administrator for Commerce Committee.
Representative Emma Greenman, South Minneapolis, 63B.
Senator Lindsay Port, represent District 55, Burnsville and Savage.
Davin Silkup, Committee Administrator for Senator Port.
Courtney Schaaf, Committee Legislative Assistant for Senator Port.
Laurie Pompeu, House Research.
Olivia Severson, Senate Counsel.
Jordan Rasmussen, Senator from Fergus Falls.
Well, good morning. You have an agenda in front of you, and I think that our goal and intent is to start with a walkthrough. We have a set of folks set up to testify, and we posted the DE, so I assume folks will be testifying on the DE, and then the adoption of amendments. And the goal is to try to get this wrapped up. I know that there's a commerce conference committee this afternoon and all sorts of stuff. So for our staff's sake, I'm hoping we can get through our work. So with that, unless there's any questions from members before we start, Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I don't have the DE in my packet. Is that?
It's the A3.
Oh, it's A3. Thank you. I missed that.
And I will note that there is a quorum present. Great. So I guess we're asking House and Senate Research to walk through the DE.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'll just do a brief walkthrough of the DE. This is a DE to House File Number 34338. It adds language to the Deceptive Trade Practices Statute. It defines what a mandatory fee is and creates several requirements, as well as provides for some exemptions as well towards the end. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't, how do I pronounce your last name?
Severson.
Thank you, Ms. Severson. With that, I think we will start with the public testimony. The first on my list is Mike Dean from North Star Prosperity.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, members, for allowing me to testify on this critical matter. My name is Mike Dean. I'm the Executive Director of North Star Prosperity. First, I want to thank Representative Greenman and Senator Port for all their engagement on this issue, meeting with stakeholders throughout the legislative session. I think it was really critical on preparing the bill that's before you today. I want to urge you to support the DE amendment and House File 3438. In fact, just last week, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau released a report emphasizing the urgent necessity of this legislation. The report illustrates that the harmful effects of price complexity on market outcomes, underscoring the immediate need for action in our state. The experiments focused on human participants engaging in basic markets with a variation of how sellers presented their prices. In treatment one, sellers could only describe their price using a single number. Treatment two allowed sellers to use up to 8 subprices, and treatment three permitted up to 16 subprices. Here's some of the key findings: that by allowing more complex pricing, it led sellers to request higher prices with an average increase of over 60% comparing with one price and 16 subprice markets. A more complex pricing resulted in buyers making more mistakes, with the frequency of mistakes increasing by over 1,400%. Higher complexity in pricing leads to higher transaction prices, with an average increase of over 70%. And in markets with multiple subprices, sellers can exploit complexity to induce buyer mistakes, disrupting standard equilibria. While increasing market competition improved outcomes to some extent, it did not eliminate the negative effects of complexity. The science is clear. Junk fees allowed consumers to be duped. These findings underscore the urgency of addressing junk fees in our marketplace. Complexity in pricing not only leads to higher costs for consumers, but also undermines the market efficiency and fairness. Consumers deserve transparency and clarity in pricing to make informed decisions without falling victim to hidden fees and unnecessary complexities. Therefore, I urge the conference committee to take decisive action today to end junk fees in Minnesota by supporting the House language in House File 3438. By doing so, we can protect consumers, promote fair competition, and ensure a more equitable marketplace for all Minnesotans. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Dean, and thank you for modeling about 2 to 3 minutes, which I should have said at the get-go. Next on my list is Carrie Warren from the MSP Business Concessions Alliance, Small Business Concessions Alliance. If you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the Conference Committee, my name is Carrie Warren, and I serve as the Executive Director for MSP Small Business Concessions Alliance. On behalf of the restaurant, retail, and federally certified airport concessions disadvantaged business enterprise, owned and operated businesses at MSP Airport, we appreciate the A9 amendment related to businesses whose prices are regulated by a government authority. But according to MAC, it may not provide enough time to ensure that our unique businesses would have time to comply with the law without lowering our prices. Airport concessionaires are likely the only entity in the state who cannot comply with both the DE and their current leases without lowering prices, because our prices are capped at street plus 10%. We do not believe that this is the intent of the legislation. Annually, the MAC does an analysis of the pricing structure at comparable non-airport retailers to set price limitations as a part of our leases. These ceilings are considered in tandem with the current allowable service fee that would become illegal at the end of the year. Our women and minority-owned business members support the goal of price transparency and only wish to comply. To do so without lowering current prices would require a reasonable number of months between the effective date for non-airport businesses to let the market settle with true pricing without fees, and to also allow the MAC to both complete their regular street price analysis and update the ordinance. We are grateful to both authors for working to better understand our unique problem. We also openly accept this conference committee's decision about the future of price transparency and only hope that you allow us enough time to comply without forced reductions in our prices. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Senator Port, acclimatizing me with the Senate. Jill Sims from Hospitality Minnesota, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Greenman. Good morning, members. Jill Sims, Director of Government Relations at Hospitality Minnesota. First and foremost, thank you to Representative Greenman and Senator Port for your willingness to continually meet with us to discuss and understand the impacts of this language. As many of you know, this legislation will greatly impact the hospitality industry, but we've considered ourselves thoughtful partners. Context for our ask today center around the fact that our business models will change for many. For example, the restaurants who might utilize the service fee generally use them to ensure the back of the house gets compensated appropriately. Given our wage and tip laws, the state has sort of created this gap between our tipped employees and non-tipped employees, and tools like tip pooling aren't available. So while not all businesses choose to utilize these fees, it is an important tool for some of these businesses. So we're really focused on helping provide guidance and implementation time to those hospitality businesses whose models will be changing. A couple items that we'd like to address in the DE. First, on line 2.9, we appreciate the inclusion of beverage when describing a food and beverage establishment. This really just helps us put us in alignment with 157.15 subdivision 5, where a lot of our models are currently defined in statute. We do reiterate our request to add the words including hotels on line 2.9 between establishment and shell. It's important because when we inquired with MDH, who licenses our establishments, Oddly, food delivery to rooms, so room service, is not included under food and beverage establishment. So we just ask that folks support the A5 amendment for clarity on this topic. I was very surprised to learn this information. Second, just offering some clarity around credit card surcharges. The credit card duopoly has led to some astronomical swipe fees for many of our businesses, even, of course, beyond hospitality. So allowing those businesses to utilize that credit card surcharge is an important tool. For example, for restaurants, it's typically the fourth highest fee behind cost behind labor, rent, and food. So we'd like to see language that addresses this. So either asking for support of the A6 amendment or offering guidance from one of the state agencies so it can be very clear on what is allowed. There's been a lot of work done on this last year, and this has been in place for some time. So just offering either the A6 or some clarity from the state. Third, we'd just like to see the consideration of the August 1, 2025 implementation date. Again, it's important to give Department of Revenue, Attorney General's Office time to put together guidance and for our businesses to plan for implementation. Additionally, we're awaiting finalized rulemaking from the FTC, so we just want to make sure that legislators and businesses have any time to make necessary adjustments. We appreciate your willingness to meet with us and to address many concerns, and we hope we can continue to work together to make this a smoother implementation process for our businesses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. And Beth Kadoon from the Chamber, you're up next. And if you just want to introduce yourself, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Beth Kadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber does support price transparency and the need for consumers to have full disclosure of cost in order to make an informed decision. At the same time, it's also very important to have clarity in the law in order to reduce confusion and unnecessary litigation risks and costs, especially when you're looking at this bill, as the law is enforced through litigation, and it does not require harm by a consumer to be able to sue under this act. Our main concern that I want to mention is the great potential for inconsistency and confusion created when adding this requirement on top of all the already extensive consumer laws and pricing laws that already exist for many industries that have been developed both at the federal and state level. We recommended the Senate language as that did it more clearly exempt industries that are already covered by these extensive pricing laws and rules. And our concern is you could have a situation where you have a business in Minnesota that is following the rules and regulations that have been provided, for example, by a federal agency for that industry, but be now subject to litigation in Minnesota, as that law has not clearly preempted state regulation. And as I've mentioned in previous testimony, there's currently a new federal regulation being promulgated by the Federal Trade Commission on this very same subject matter. That rule does seem to have some differing terms. And also, as mentioned, looking at exempting industries that are already covered under other federal laws. So we do recommend the Senate date, and we also recommend, we encourage you to adopt the A4 amendment that also deals with that issue on the federal and state other regulations. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Kadoon. Next, Paul Egger from the Minnesota Realtors.
Madam Chair, my name is Paul Egger, and I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. We're a business trade association with over 21,000 members working with buyers and sellers statewide. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. We worked with Senator Port in the Senate on language that appears in the Senate bill, which provides an exemption for any fees, surcharges, or other costs associated with settlement services as defined in the Federal Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. Without that language, Minnesota Realtors has to respectfully oppose the DE amendment to House File 3438. We requested the language in the Senate bill because when a home is advertised for sale, most of the services and costs associated with buying a home are outside the seller's and the seller's agent's control, and the amounts are unknown. Services such as title insurance, mortgage loans, appraisals, abstracts, home inspections, to name just a few. Purchasing real property is complicated and involves several steps and includes services by a variety of service providers. fees related to closing services, obtaining title insurance, securing a mortgage, and the other fees associated with buying a home could be considered mandatory fees under the bill's definition of that term. However, there is no way for the home seller or the seller's agent to know the closing costs for the buyer when the seller and the seller's agent advertise the home for sale. Basically, this bill seems to apply the same advertising requirements for a sandwich at a restaurant as it does for advertising a home for sale. And while the cost of a sandwich may be easy to determine up front, selling real property is complicated and includes a lot of steps and various services. Without the RESPA services exclusion in the Senate bill, we do not know how sellers of real property and our members would comply with the requirements of the bill. Senator Port has been working with me on some language that's in an amendment that's been drafted for the bill, and we really appreciate those conversations and the efforts to address the concerns that we've shared. The language in the amendment, Senator Port and I have traded messages this morning, and we did have some additional suggestions for that language. We think we can reach some agreement, but we're not ready to say that that addresses the full concern that we have with the language that is in the amendment that doesn't appear in the bill. I think what we're trying to clarify in the language in the amendment, and perhaps Senator Port can help with some legislative intent, is that the intent of the amendment would not be to require the inclusion of real estate commissions and broker services fees in the advertising of a sales price for a home. That you're trying to direct to make sure that the bill is not exempting the agreements between brokers and their clients. And I think that's what the amendment is attempting to do. We're just not sure that the language is clear enough in that respect. So perhaps some additional work on that language to refine it a bit. It could be clearer than it currently is. But I think that's the intent, as I understand it, and I see Senator Port nodding, then I think that addresses much of our concern, but I'm not sure that the language is quite there. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
The last on my list is Matt Kelleher from the state and local, from the American Economics Liberty Project. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Greenman and members of the Conference Committee on House File 3438, thank you for allowing me to speak in support of your work here today. My name is Matt Kelleher. I am a state and local policy specialist at the American Economic Liberties Project, an organization dedicated to reducing the power that corporations wield over our lives and our wallets. I am also a St. Paul resident. This legislation will require the sellers of goods and services to disclose all mandatory fees in advertising and during the purchasing process, or, in other words, end the practice of junk fees. Junk fees are a pernicious and near ubiquitous pricing practice that costs the average Minnesota family of four more than $3,000 per year. We've all experienced junk fees when we pay for food delivery, cell phone bills, rent, storage units, and on and on. And these fees don't only harm consumers. They harm local businesses that want to use transparent, honest pricing and therefore appear artificially more expensive than those corporations that rely on junk fees. I am here today to voice our strong support for this legislation. We are grateful for the diligent and determined efforts by the bill authors in both the House and the Senate to get the bill into the shape that it is in today. And for meeting with all stakeholders in order to make good faith efforts at improving the bill and addressing legitimate concerns, while still accomplishing the core goal of this legislation, which is to ensure fair pricing practices across the state of Minnesota. Our polling on this issue, which you can learn more about at endjunkfees.com, shows that Minnesotans strongly support state legislation to ban junk fees. That support from more than 85% of likely voters transcends the political divide. As Democrats, Independents, and Republicans all back a ban on junk fees. And to that end, we've been very excited to see bipartisan support for this legislation in the Senate and encourage all members to support this work. We remain in strong support of this bill, and we are ready and able to answer any of your questions about this issue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kelleher. And are there any members of the public who wish to testify who are not signed up? Any takers? Seeing no additional members of the public to testify, I'm going to move on to the bill, and I will move the A3 amendment, which should be the DE, to be before us. And then I think I'm going to start by moving that we have a technical amendment that in combining the two bills was caught and some advice was offered actually by NFIB, which is the A8, which is just making sure that the sentence structure is consistent throughout. Are there any questions about the I will move the A8 to the A3. Are there any questions about this amendment? All in favor of adopting the A8 to the A3, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The A8 is adopted. Moving on to the substantive amendments, I will maybe start with Senator Rasmussen, the A5, if that makes sense. Do you want to move the A5?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'd like to move the A5, and I'm happy to explain.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Senator Rasmussen moves the A5 amendment. Please go ahead and explain the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is language that just basically specifies in the bill when we're talking about hotels as a food and beverage establishment. It's just making sure that we're specifying hotels, and this is in response to some odd guidance from the Minnesota Department of Health that basically considers room service to be an individual catering service. And so this amendment would just clarify that restaurants and hotels are treated the same as room service, and just making sure that there isn't confusion on that point.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rasmussen, thanks for bringing this amendment, and thank you to Hospitality Minnesota, who's been a great partner working through this, helping to make sure that they can comply with the law as it's intended. I support this amendment and encourage folks to vote yes.
Any discussion to the amendment? All in favor of the A5, say aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. The A5 is adopted. Moving on to the A4. Senator Rasmussen, that's also your amendment.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, would you mind if I actually made a different amendment at this time? Or would you like me to move the A4?
This is Senator Rasmussen, this is the Senate changing things on the fly. I think that Senator Port and I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. So, and I think this will actually maybe address a few different issues, including the A4. And I know we also have another amendment, I believe, in our packet, the A9, that I think this would address as well. So, Madam Chair, I'd move an oral amendment on page 2, line 32 of the A3. Strike January 1, insert June 1. And I'd be happy to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. So just so that I'm clear, your amendment would be this oral amendment, not the language in A4, or in addition to the language in A4. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to withdraw that oral amendment, and I'm actually, I want to make it in a different spot up here, if that's okay. And maybe I can explain a little bit what I'm trying to do as I talk about the amendment. So one of the concerns I think we're going to be talking about today, both with the A9 and perhaps some other ones, is just the complexity of how this legislation is going to impact a number of different industries. And I know, Madam Chair, from our conversations that you're concerned, for example, with the A4 being a fairly broad exemption, touching on a lot of different industries that could be impacted by state and local law. We've heard from a number of stakeholders here today on you know, different exemptions that are perhaps included in the bill or not included in the bill to adjust to different issues that they see. And so what I'm effectively proposing here today is that we would have a unified effective date for this bill to be June 1. And the rationale behind that would be, you know, because I don't believe the A4 is going to be adopted, that would give different industries another legislative session. If there were major issues, maybe there won't be any major issues, but if there are major issues, that would give them the opportunity to come and talk about perhaps why there should be an exemption if they're regulated under state or federal law. And so I believe, and I would defer to counsel on this, but I believe the two places to make that for the effective date would be on page 2, line 23, and also on page 2, line 32 for the exemptions, and we'll be changing that to June 1. So I'm happy to offer that amendment, but that's what I'm trying to do here, because I think that would address a number of the conversations and concerns here today.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Rasmussen, members, I'll ask for a no vote on this amendment for a couple of reasons. First, I think it's actually helpful to have this start prior to or right around the time of the next legislative session. I think if we push it off until after the next legislative session is over, no one will have changed anything by then, and we won't actually know if it works or doesn't work, or where the concerns are to be able to change them during next session if needed. And secondly, to the connection to the A9, we actually need the base law to go into effect before the Metropolitan Airports Commission, because they base their prices off of street prices. So they need to know if this law raises prices or lowers prices or has no effect on prices in the market in general before they set their prices. That's why they have a slightly later proposed in the amendment coming effective date. So it actually matters that there is a gap between when the law as a whole goes in and when it goes into effect for the MAC. So members, I encourage a no vote.
Thank you, Senator Port. I would concur with Senator Port on that, both in terms of the timing. We are already from the House position, which would have been going into effect in August of 2024. The January 1, 2025, I think, was a compromise between the House and Senate language, and it is 6 months to implement, which is, frankly, a lot more time than many provisions like this. And so I would also urge a no vote. And I would ask, is there any discussion to this amendment before turning it back to the amendment author? No discussion? Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think I withdrew the oral amendment. I don't think I'll offer it, because I don't think it'll be successful here today. But I'm just, Madam Chair, attempting to stand up for the Senate position, because I think we had an effective date that was, you know, after, you know, the summer of 2025. And so with that, Madam Chair, would like to offer the A6, and I'm happy to explain.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Senator Rasmussen is offering the A6. You want to explain the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the A6 would essentially, when we're looking at credit card surcharges, specify that it would be exempt from this law as long as it's in compliance with Section 325G.051. And you know, there's been some concern around, you know, how the current language in the DE would impact credit cards, and you know, if there were other payment methods that perhaps did not have a surcharge, how that would be impacted. And so this would clarify that for credit card surcharges. And I think one of the concerns too, you know, with this is, you know, will we be getting some guidance, you know, from the Attorney General's office on how this issue is going to be treated? You know, one concern that was brought up is if you had a retailer that charged a credit card surcharge but, you know, also accepted cash, you know, could you have a consumer who perhaps doesn't have cash and just has their credit card with them? Would that create an issue for them? And so that's why I'm bringing this amendment here today.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen, and I appreciate the conversation we've had about this. I would, members, ask for a no vote on this. This particular issue of credit card surcharges is something we've been talking about since before the first bill hearing, and I think that the language is actually clear and does what we needed to do. I think that the problem I have with this language is that it would exempt out all credit card surcharges, and so I think when you read the language in its plain language, that a mandatory fee includes something that must be paid in order to purchase the good or services is not reasonably avoidable by customers. When we talk about a retail setting, for instance, or I think most common when people think about it, if you're getting a bite to eat and you can pay with credit card or you can pay with cash, that is not mandatory for the purposes of purchasing the good or service. It's also reasonably avoidable by customers. That, I think, from the beginning and when we got in very early, both Senator Port and I went and talked to council and have been having this conversation, that clearly does not fall with if there is another option. The reason that I oppose this language and is if there isn't another option, let's say you are an online retailer and the only way you can pay is a credit card, then that should be baked into the price. The whole idea here is that you should be told up front. When you're told a price, you should be told what you need to do to buy that good or service. And so in this case, I appreciate and I think we have talked about and I think we'd be happy to get further guidance. What I will say, and the lawyer in me, is this, it is very easy to traffic in the abstract, but this language and is whether it's the reasonably avoided by the consumer or frankly the must be paid in order to purchase good and service seems very clear to me, and so I think it's important that we put on the record that we are intending, if it is not mandatory, if it is an option, you can pay cash, you can pay credit, we anticipate that this won't apply, and that's why we don't need the exclusion. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I do appreciate that clarity and that dialogue, and one question I'd have for you, Madam Chair, just to kind of talk about legislative intent with the must be paid standard and the not reasonably avoidable. If we had a consumer who was trying to make a purchase online from an online retailer and they had an option of using a credit card or a debit card, and with the debit card there was no surcharge, because I believe there's some federal legislation where you can't have a surcharge on a debit card, but there was a surcharge for the credit card, would that be permissible? Would that be permissible under this bill for that online retailer to charge a surcharge for the credit card but to not have one on the debit card?
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen, and conferring with our answers are the same with my co-author, which is yes, and as we talked about, right, I think it would probably not be reasonable if it was Bitcoin or something that is not a common currency, but debit cards like cash are something that are common currency and used all the time. And again, it fits to the principle of do you have to pay it in order to purchase the good or service? And in that case, the example you used, if you can use a credit card or you can use a form of payment that does not have a fee, what you need to pay to purchase the good or service is the price with no additional fee. Thank you, Senator. Speak to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I appreciate the clarification of that. And I do think, because this is effectively going to be enforced by the Attorney General's office, I think, especially on this issue, I don't know if the Attorney General's office, would be interested in issuing guidance or just some clarity as questions come up before this is effective. But I think that could be useful on this issue. But with that, Madam Chair, I'll withdraw the A6.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. You are withdrawing the A6. Is that, did I get to the end of your amendments?
No.
The A4. Do you want to? I'll move the A4. Do you want to explain the amendment?
Yeah, so Madam Chair, the A4 is language that we had in the Senate bill that would include in the list of exemptions any industry where federal law or other state law regulates pricing disclosures. And I think this is trying to get at some of the issues that we've heard from testifiers today, some of the exemptions that are included in this bill, pricing, especially for regulated industries, whether it be realtors or, funeral homes, can be complicated and nuanced. And this is just would clarify that if there is pricing disclosures for those industries under state or federal law, that they would be exempted. I wish I had a list of, the 10 to 20 different exemptions that would make sense. But I think just given the, fast-moving nature of this process and given the fact that the effective date is going to be January 1, I think this would be a way to just make sure we're not creating issues for industries. And if we still see junk fees that are issues, that's something that we could fine-tune and address. But I think this is just an amendment that would have a cautious approach and make sure that we're not creating conflict for any businesses with state and federal law.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen, and I appreciate that explanation in the conversation. And members, I would ask you to vote no on this. We did not have this in the House language for a very specific reason, because this, while there is regulation at the both state and federal level of pricing, there is not, in almost no cases, except for two, which we have in the bill, all-inclusive pricing, which is the goal of this. The goal of this bill is not to list out everything that has to be disclosed. The goal is to say that you, if you are advertising or offering a price, everything in there that is mandatory has to be in that price. In I think, almost all cases, that is the rule that should sit right next to the disclosure and the potentially more significant disclosure that is industry specific. This is a consumer expectation standard. I think we think should be economy wide. People should be able to look at a price and understand what they have to pay. And so with that, I will just also note, because this is in language that is in the DE that we worked out in response to a few areas where there actually has been on this issue regulation, and I just point members to both I at 2.14 and J at 2.19. Those are the places where both with broadband and with cable and satellite TV, where there are actually specific federal rules in this arena trying to do this thing. And what we have said is, if you're compliant with that, you can be compliant with this. The other thing in response to this conversation we've been having is, and I think that this is how how it would be enforced anyways, but in places where it's preempted or where there, it's whether it's field preemption or express preemption, we included that language in K to make it clear that it wasn't, that the law didn't apply. So, Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do really appreciate in the DE, taking some of that language, where it was very clear on there's federal law that regulates pricing quite closely. I guess, Madam Chair, my question to you and to Senator Port would be, I think some of the concerns that I've heard from some of the businesses that could be impacted by this is, if this becomes law and, they get in and closer to implementation and they see that, okay, I have this federal pricing disclosure or I have this state pricing disclosure that may put me in conflict with this new junk fees legislation. Madam Chair, my question to you and Senator Port is, and I know it's always nice to be done with legislation, but would the two of you be open to, looking if there are some reasonable exemptions or if there's especially conflict with federal and state law to next session having something that would help resolve some of those conflicts?
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. And I will not speak for both of us, but I will say I think from the beginning of this process, we have been doing a lot of that work. And I think it is much, as I said, I think creating things like this in the abstract actually sometimes don't accomplish what you want, but in many cases, and in the case like this amendment, I think would got some of the things we're trying to do. I think as folks are, and to what Senator Port said in terms of the effectiveness, as folks are starting to implement this, if there are places where we can make sure, and again, everything is with the standard, and I think as we've been looking at all of this, the question is, the standard is consumer expectation. And so I think I would be open to working with you and others as we move forward, as long as what we're doing is keeping the spirit and the intent of the bill, which is all in pricing. Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Rasmussen. Yes, of course. I think it's critical that we continue on any piece of legislation to examine the impacts and how it's actually working, and is it achieving what we wanted to achieve. And I think we're going to continue to see more movement at the federal level in this direction. And in cases where federal law and state law cover the same thing, federal law beats us in most cases. And so I think it will be important for us to keep an eye on this and see if there are additional places where the federal law is more effective or things like that that we can learn lessons from as well.
Senator Port, or Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I really appreciate, Madam Chair, your commitment and Senator Port's commitment to you know, looking at issues that may arise. And I actually agree that that is probably a better approach than the amendment that's before the committee. And so I'll withdraw the A4 at this time.
Thank you. Senator Rasmussen withdraws the A4. That brings us to the A9. And do you want me to offer the A9?
I would offer the A9.
Thank you. Senator Port offers the A9. Do you want to explain the amendment?
Yep. Members, this moves back to June 1st, 2025, industries where the prices are regulated by the Metropolitan Airport Commission, simply because those prices are based on street price plus 10% is what they're able to do. And the argument to move this back is to make sure that this law is able to be implemented, be in existence out in our communities, to see if prices change either up or down before, so they have some time to set those prices based on this new price disclosure that or transparency that folks will have. So I ask for your support for this amendment.
Thank you, Senator Port. And I will just add, having had the airport in my district until redistricting, I have had a lot of conversations about this. We think it is really important. There was an initial that the rules that apply at the airport as well. Again, our goal and our standard is across the board for consumer expectations. I think I agree with Senator Port that having a little bit of time, I checked with at least one MAC board member, and they felt confident that with this time frame, there's two things, both the street pricing, it'll adjust the street pricing, and also right now there is a conversation about if the plus 10% isn't enough to do to ensure and sort of cover the cost, the additional cost that it takes to run a business at the airport, that that is something for the MAC board, as they can look at whether it makes sense to increase that 10% or not. And I know that they expect that conversation to be coming. And so with that, I would also recommend a yes vote. And I'd ask if there's any discussion to the A10. The A9. Thank you. With no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. The A9 is adopted. On to the A10. Senator Port, do you want to offer the A10?
Yeah, I'll move the A10, Madam Chair.
Do you want to explain the amendment?
Yep. Members, so this adds onto the exemptions section, fees and surcharges and other costs as defined under the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, with the exception that it does not apply to real estate broker commissions and fees, which are a separate part of that. But as the realtors explained, and we've had many conversations over the last couple of weeks, the items that are under the Real Estate Procedures Act there is a lot of them. They are very complicated, and many of them are set by the brokers, not by real estate agents anyway. They have no control over what those prices are, and it is closely defined in that act, and so we felt that that was a reasonable exemption with the exception of disclosure upfront, disclosure at the time when they discuss commission needs to be a full disclosure of what commission will be.
Thank you, Senator Port. And I can speak to this because the Senate, the House language did not have this exception. Many states that are sort of in the same place we are in terms of passing this legislation do not have this exception. I think that there was some concern, I will say, when I was talking to my colleagues in the House about the recent litigation and settlement around specifically this, about brokers' fees and other things. And so I think as we were talking about it, we had a good conversation in the House with a few of our experts who know the real estate market, both in a, it was sort of a bipartisan, Representative Dotseth and I had a conversation with our bipartisan real estate caucus, I'll say, and got some good feedback. And I think where we felt comfortable, what I felt comfortable is to that point, and I think that Representative O'Driscoll actually described this very well, which is there are sort of transactional costs, whether it's title or insurance or all those things that are really outside the control of the broker and the agent. And then there is the service price, the compensation part, which is set by the broker. And it was important, and I think especially in light of the ongoing conversation, but that this litigation is exposed, is I think that there's a both a transparency and a trust issue, and so making sure that that compensation, those fees and commissions are a part of this and are disclosed in a way that fits consumers' expectations, which is when you tell them how much it's going to cost, it shouldn't be in four different lump sums that people don't know up front. I think that this amendment accomplishes that, and so I just wanted to give you a little bit of background because the House conversation has been different and we didn't have this language, and that is why I am comfortable with this amendment and would encourage folks to vote yes. With that, I assume there will be a little discussion. Is there? Oh, great. Does anyone have any questions, comments, concerns? Okay. With that, all in favor of the A10 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. The A10 is adopted. So that leaves us with the underlying A3 as amended.
Madam Chair.
Discussion to the A3. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have two more amendments.
Oh.
And I wanted to wait because they kind of have a structuring impact. Worked with Senate counsel to ensure that this is a technical amendment, but I think would actually help structure this bill in a way that's just a little bit easier to read. So I'd move the A12 at this time, and I'm happy to explain it or have Senate counsel explain it. Maybe I'll have Senate counsel start, and I'll add in some context for why I'm offering this.
Yes, and can I just, we're just making sure everybody has it in front of them before we start discussing it will be great. Everyone have a copy of the amendment in front of them?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Council. Thank you, members. So what the A12 does on lines 1.3 and 1.4, it deletes lines are on page 1, it deletes lines 20 to 27. On page 2, it deletes lines 1 to 21. And then it essentially just puts that language back into the underlying bill on page 2 after line 31. So what that's doing is it's pulling out the language that provides for certain compliance requirements and putting them into the exemption subdivision, which is 1B.
Madam Chair, I can add some context.
Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So as I was going through the A3, there are a few paragraphs, and I think we've actually described them in this way in the committee as effectively exemptions in the first subdivision. And so like an example that I'll give is if we look at the A3 on page 2, line 1, we talk about an auction as an example. And effectively, when you read that language, it's effectively an exemption for auctions if they meet those circumstances. And if we go down and look at G, H, I, J, I think J is another great example, where we're effectively creating, you know, those are exemptions, but they're not included in the subdivision that lists out exemptions. And so what this amendment is doing, it is just literally pulling out those paragraphs C, F, G, H, I, and J that read as exemptions in subdivision one, and it's replacing them in the exemption section. And the reason I think this is important is just for readability of this statute as we're going back, and to clarify that the reason that those paragraphs are included, like paragraph J, for example, for the FCC, you know, people that are compliant with the FCC rule that's referenced there, the pricing requirements, that's not viewed as an instruction, as more so it's an exemption from the requirements. And so that's what trying to do with this amendment, just to make sure it's a little easier for folks to follow in the future.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen, and I appreciate that both deep dive into the structure. Appreciate that. I'm going to recommend a no vote on this for a few reasons, and we adopted part of the reason we adopted that amendment right at the front, which was technical but was about sort of stylistically, is I actually think that there is a distinction between what I would say is sort of accommodations for a pricing structure, like auctions, like delivery. It is a place where we spent a lot of time, again, sort of engaging in this conversation and figuring out with the goal of the bill, how to do that. When I think about both the auto dealers and folks regulated by the MPCA, those are actually just exceptions for a set of reasons. The thing I will say about the both the broadband and the FCC or the two FCC rules is because they are rules, they are federal rules, and they can change in the administration and everything else. The way we wrote these and our intention, and I think this is what other states are doing too, is to the extent that there is a rule and you're complying with it, is in compliance. If for some reason there is no longer that rule, that the underlying statute continues to apply. I don't think I feel comfortable that it is clear, especially with those revisions to make sure that it is shall deemed compliant. And again, I see them more as accommodations and a distinction with exemptions. So I would recommend a no vote. Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and appreciate the conversation on this amendment. And I just think it's, you know, right now when I kind of read the A3 as amended, and I do appreciate you taking that earlier amendment. I actually have another amendment that if the amendment before the committee is adopted would make that same technical change that was made. So I think, you know, we could make that work here today. And I worry that, you know, effectively when I read through these different paragraphs, they're effectively, you know, creating an exemption for folks that are in compliance with that. And I just am worried about the readability and perhaps confusion in the future. You know, maybe that's something we'll have a conversation on another day. So I will withdraw the A12 at this time.
Senator Rasmussen withdraws the A12, and did you have one more amendment? Okay. Does anyone else have any amendments? Appreciate that. And so now on to the discussion of the A3 as amended. Discussion to the amendment. Representative Dodseth.
Thank you, Chair Greenman. The question I've got is if a consumer walks into a restaurant or a coffee shop that with only a credit card, just for clarification, and I want to make certain that the facility is actually in compliance if they offer a cash discount if people actually come in with cash, just to make sure that they will be in compliance and that it, that it's not baked into the price of a cup of coffee, that it's just for clarification's sake.
Thank you, Representative Dodson. Then I can take a swing at this. And I think if the hypothetical is there's a price and you discount folks for cash, mm-hmm. That is both okay with the structure of the bill, and we also, in conversation, added a specific on 130, nothing will prevent a person from offering goods or services at a discounted price. We don't want to stop folks from lowering their price. I think, again, this is the idea that people should know what something costs, but if it costs less, that's great. On the issue of, and I think we had a side conversation about this, but and I think that both the language and the way that I think language would be interpreted is a mandatory fee includes but is not limited to a fee or surcharge that must be paid in order to purchase the good or price being advertised. And if what you're saying is you walk into a shop and they say cash is one price and you can pay a 3% credit card fee and you don't have cash, that's on you. I think that they are being fair and transparent, though. And if you have the option to pay with cash, even if that individual consumer doesn't have cash, I think that that would fit the sort of the intention of the bill and also the way that we talked about credit card charges. If that answers your question, as we're thinking about the intent.
It does. The intent, they will be in compliance and they won't be in any violation, correct?
Thank you, Representative Dodseth. I think that's both of our both intents, and I think that that's the plain language, plain reading of the bill. Senator Marty.
So, Madam Chair, so in effect, if a restaurant says this is the price and you have a 3% surcharge for credit cards, or they can do it, this is the price and you can have a discount for cash, either way complies, both ways.
Senator Marty, yes, I think that's correct. Yep. Further discussion to the Senator Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the conversation today, and I also appreciate that we had the opportunity for testifiers to come. Not all conference committees allow testifiers to come, and so I appreciate the conversation, the dialogue, and discussion of different amendments. I wish we maybe could have had a few more changes in this bill today. I really like the Senate position, voted for it on the Senate floor, and I just think that this will be an issue that will likely come back next session as we go through the complexities of where state and federal law have something to say on pricing disclosures. I know Minnesotans are annoyed with junk fees because I'm annoyed with junk fees as a consumer. I do think it's important, though, that taking a step back, I think one of the reasons why we're seeing more junk fees out there and more hidden pricing is because of the economic environment over the last few years where we've had very high inflation, in my view, driven by trillions of dollars in deficit spending coming from Washington, tax increases in this state that businesses have to push onto consumers. And I think that's a junk fee that Minnesotans really care about is the cost of inflation to them, the $10 billion in tax increases that this legislature passed last year. And I think that'll be a concern that, unfortunately, this bill doesn't address is those increased costs to businesses that are being passed on to consumers. And so I think that'll be an issue we'll have to continue talking about as well. But appreciate the conversation today.
Thank you, Senator Rasmussen. Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that, one, I appreciate your way of going through this, not having been heavily engaged until here to how you've dealt with all the exceptions. I know a number of years ago when we were trying to ban mercury, we started with a total ban, and then people make the case on why certain things need to continue it, and this was a lot smaller than we thought it would be. But I think that's the appropriate approach. If somebody has a reason for exception next year, we can address it then. So, but this is, I think this is something people have been calling for a long time, so thank you.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Representative Dodson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a final statement I want to make is I appreciate the heart behind this bill, and I understand the intent of what's trying to be accomplished. The concern I've got is there were some good amendments that were offered today that I wish we could have actually came to an agreement on. That would have been helpful. The biggest concern I've got is I think we received the draft amendment last night at dark of night, I'd say, it was probably 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night. It makes it challenging to actually come in and try to amend and adjust and work with this at the last minute. I understand that there's been a lot of work and a lot of heart put into this bill prior, but I think that With that said, I mean, it's just not quite ready for prime time. I think we're getting closer with what you've got here, but I think with some of these amendments, that would have helped made us a much better bill. But thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dodseth. Representative Reen.
Thank you, Chair Greenman, for bringing this forward. I was intrigued by the comment from Matt Kelleher that, you know, a family of four will experience $3,000 a year in junk fees. And I know, you know, budgets are tight and corporations are receiving, you know, seeing record profits. So I think this is a really good bill. I'm very happy to be a co-author with you and Senator Port, and look forward to seeing this passed, which is good for our consumers. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Reem. Senator Port.
Thank you, Chair Greenman. Representative Reem, you stole my thunder. I think that $3,000 per family on average is a really, really stark number. And it's not a number Minnesotans can afford to be surprised by. And I think that is really the key here. I trust Minnesota consumers. I think they are smart. I think they are able to make decisions that are best for their family and best for their budgets, but they have to know what the cost of things are in order to do that. And to get all the way through a transaction, all the way through a dinner, all the way through buying, you know, tickets to something for your family, and then having a surprise fee pop in at the end, it makes it difficult to make the decisions for your family that you can afford. And I think our goal with this bill was really to say, we want consumers to be able to fully understand the costs in front of them before they choose to buy an item or use a service. That's really the key to this. We're not saying you can't charge these things. We're saying you have to tell consumers up front so that they can make an educated decision for their families. As for the Senate position versus the House position, I think we made some really good compromises in this bill. There are a number of things that came from the Senate side, including that pesky ore on 2.6. working with the auto dealers, I want to thank the auto dealers for their continued engagement with us and willingness to work with us. The Public Utilities Commission, the realtors, all of our Senate counsel who has helped us many, many times work through the right way to do this. Our goal is to make this easy and clear for consumers at the end, and I am really, really proud to be an author of this bill.
Thank you, Senator Port. And I will just say sort of building on top of that, and this really has been, Senator Rasmussen, it's nice since you left us in the House, I look forward to continuing to work with you on this. And I'm excited that we can continue to do that work. I think as Senator Port and I both talked about this at the very beginning, and to Senator Marty's point, there has been a lot of conversation around this in various forms for a long, long time. And I think one of the things and one of the reasons you see both at the federal and the state level folks really interested in acting is it is just spread like wildfire across our economy, which is why I think we thought it was so important to have a one rule that meets consumer expectations. And whether you're buying whether you're buying a burger, whether you're buying, you know, something online, or whether you're paying your rent. And I will say that since I started working on this bill, I now on a regular get texts and emails from not just a lot of House and Senate members, but my neighbor or whoever else who ask about the status of this bill because they see it. And the most egregious is I was sitting in labor and one of my colleagues said that to pay their rent down here, they had a $61 convenience fee, but there was only one way to pay it. And so it's not just in hospitality or retail. It is in all sorts of places. And the goal here is just for Minnesota consumers to be able to say, you know what the price is before you pay for it or before you get so far down the line that you're frustrated. And then the thing we really haven't brought up here is it is also really important for a fair market. My sort of high school college economics assumed price transparency, and so making sure that you can compare, and we heard this from some small businesses who don't want to do this and hate hate junk fees. But as we saw in the example of StubHub and Ticketmaster, even the folks who say, people hate it, I'm not going to do it, something about our psychology says if you see a lower price, even if in the back of your head you know it might increase, you go with that lower price. And so this is actually, and I heard from a few different industries, like, just make sure it's economy-wide so that there's not, we're not picking winners and losers. We have one price. And so I think from a market perspective, from a fair market perspective, and especially at a moment where I hear a lot of our consumers saying the economy feels tilted against them, feels rigged in all sorts of ways. This is something I think we can do that says we just want people to have the information and that power and ensure that consumers are the ones who are making those choices and that the businesses and small businesses are competing on an even playing field. So with that, I think I will, I mean, unless there's anything else. One, just also want to thank our particular staff who've been in it, and especially our researchers and nonpartisan staff who have been in this. We have had, you know, probably at this point now 50, 100 hours of conversations with stakeholders, with industries, with small businesses, and others. And so thank you for those of you who were in those meetings on Saturday for 3 hours going through this. Just wanted to make that thank you for on behalf of Senator Port and I. This is a better bill because of that work. So with that, members, I guess I would ask Simon to tell me what I need to say. To the underlying amendment, we already did discussion. All in favor say aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion prevails. The A3 is amendment, as amended, is adopted. And Senator Port moves nonpartisan staff to be instructed to assemble a conference report and make any technical changes needed to reflect the will of the committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails. With that, members, we are adjourned. I think that the one thing I am supposed to say is that we're going to need you to sign the conference report. So make sure to look out for that for the six members who have to sign it. And please watch your email. With that, we are adjourned.